This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. President Biden's calling on Israel to do more in protecting civilians during its war with Hamas, a U.S.-designated terrorist group. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
Days after warning Israel risks losing international support over conducting indiscriminate bombing in Gaza.
I want them to be focused on how to save civilian lives. Not stop going after Hamas, but be more careful.
It was a message National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan gave in person to Israeli leaders.
Gratitude for the steps they're taking, but also to continue to urge them to take more, because we want to see them be more precise, more surgical, more deliberate, more cautious going forward.
Kirby says Sullivan talked about possibly transitioning from high-intensity operations
to lower-intensity operations sometime in the near future.
That came as Israel's defense chief predicted a drawn-out war, saying it will take months to destroy Hamas. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Congress is departing Washington without a deal to pass wartime support for Ukraine. President Joe Biden's administration is racing to negotiate with Senate Republicans who are demanding changes to U.S. border security policy, and the Senate plans to return next week in hopes of finalizing a deal to place new restrictions on asylum claims at the U.S. border and pass the $110 billion package of aid for Ukraine, Israel, and other national security needs. But the House showed no sign of returning to push the legislation through the full Congress. Lawmakers leaving the impasse unresolved through the holidays means the Biden administration will have to rely on a dwindling supply of funds for Ukraine. For additional stories 24 hours a day, visit voanews.com. This is VOA News. Soccer superstar Lionel Messi's World Cup jerseys become the highest-selling sports memorabilia of this year. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The fans went wild in 2022 when Argentina won the World Cup in Qatar. And now a high-stakes bidder can take home some of that glory. Six jerseys worn by Lionel Messi, who scored two goals in the final game, sold at auction for $7.8 million. Sotheby's says some of the proceeds will go to a children's hospital in Barcelona, Spain. The 36-year-old Messi, who now plays for Inter Miami, spent nearly two decades at Barcelona. The highest ever sports memorabilia bid, Michael Jordan's 1998 NBA Finals jersey for over $10 million. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Female soccer fans in Iran have claimed a small win in their campaign to be allowed into stadiums to watch men's games after decades of near total exclusion and harassment. A photograph was posted on social media by the campaign group Open Stadiums of three female fans inside the Azadi Stadium in Tehran on Thursday for the game between city rivals Persepolis and Esteghlal. Up to 3,000 tickets were set to be made available for women. FIFA President Gianni Infantino praised the progress. Though some women have attended selected games in recent years, Open Stadiums has said that too few fans could buy tickets and they faced harassment from morality police. Police have arrested three people in Denmark and one in the Netherlands on suspicion of planning terror attacks. AP correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
Speaking at a news conference in Copenhagen, Flemming Dreher, the head of PET, Denmark's Security and Intelligence Service, said, "Today's arrests and the operation are based on an intensive investigation that PET has carried out in close cooperation with our foreign partners." He added the arrests in Denmark had threads abroad and were related to criminal gangs, singling out the band's predominantly immigrant gang known as Loyal to La Familia. He also cryptically said Danish police had a special focus on Jewish institutions, but did not provide more details. At a European Union summit in Brussels, Denmark's Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said, "This is as serious as it gets, and I'm pleased with the work of the authorities." I'm Karen Shamus.
The Michigan Court of Appeals won't stop former President Donald Trump from appearing on the state's 2024 Republican primary ballot. The court turned aside challenges from critics who argued that Trump's role in the 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol disqualifies him. The court affirmed lower court rulings without determining whether Trump falls under the insurrection clause in the Constitution's 14th Amendment. The court says Michigan's primary election ballot is up to the political parties. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, December 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Democratic Republic of Congo government recruits students to fight rebels.
At the University of Goma, more than 50 young people have gone to the training center in Kisangani to become national defense reservists. They form the first wave of recruits.
Regional analysts are skeptical as ECOWAS tries to negotiate with Niger's coup leaders. In Liberia, the battle for Speaker of the House of Representatives heats up. We'll speak with one of the candidates. Supporters of Senegalese opposition politician Ousmane Sonko are relieved after a court ruling in his favor.
Even 24 hours will be enough for Mr. Sonko to do what it takes to present his candidacy for the upcoming presidential elections.
And Zambia's parliament passes an access to information bill. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A new law in the Democratic Republic of Congo is bringing many university students into the city of Kisangani for basic military training. Some DRC citizens in the insecure province of North Kivu welcome the new measure by the Ministry of Higher Education and Universities, while others consider it a potential problem for national security. Zanep Netizaide reports from Goma.
At the University of Goma, more than 50 young people have gone to the training center in Kisangani to become national defense reservists. They form the first wave of recruits. Many others are waiting their turn, including Matata Ndole, a student at the Faculty of Agronomy, who is impatient. He says that what motivated him to do this training was seeing that in many other countries this is done, and that he thinks the DRC is lagging behind. That's why he also wants to be ready to defend the country at any moment. For now, the student's commitment is voluntary, but Mashauri Fabrice, a professor in the Faculty of Law, would like to see it made compulsory and extended to all citizens capable of taking the training. He says the ministry has been thinking about finding another way to contribute to ensuring peace. He says the country has been at war for years, so several mechanisms need to be tried at the same time. Every Congolese has a duty to defend the homeland, so everyone should be obligated to do military service. On December 1st, President Felix Tshisekedi signed an ordinance on the national coordination of Congolese army reservists. The decision by the Ministry of Higher Education and Universities to include students in the army reserves does have critics. Pascal Mahamba thinks it risks doing more harm than good to national security. He says the measure is more of a danger than the current situation, which is characterized by fights in universities between students who behave like delinquents. He says military training could create problems that will be difficult to manage. The DRC has struggled for decades to contain more than 100 armed rebel groups, most of them in the country's east. Last month, it agreed with the United Nations to end the UN peacekeeping force in the region. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
The Democratic Republic of Congo has asked the United Nations mission in the country for help in transporting materials needed for general elections next week. This as it pushes for that mission to leave, according to a letter from the ambassador seen by the French news agency, the AFP, on Thursday. The Security Council is to vote next week on a withdrawal plan devised by Kinshasa and the United Nations mission. The West African bloc ECOWAS is seeking to hold talks with Niger's military government and chart a course forward following the country's July coup that ousted President Mohamed Bazoum. The bloc is pushing for Bazoum's release and a shorter path back to democratic rule, but analysts worry the measure may not succeed. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Niger is one of several African countries that have experienced coups or attempted coups in recent years. At a recent summit in Abuja, Nigeria, West African leaders from regional bloc ECOWAS agreed to negotiate with Niger for a, quote, short transition period to democratic rule, promising to progressively ease economic and political bans upon successful dialogue. Niger's military has proposed a three-year transition period. ECOWAS wants a shorter transition and has set up a three-person committee composed of the presidents of Togo, Sierra Leone, and Benin to negotiate with Niger's military government. During this week's summit, the fourth in 6 months, West African leaders also demanded the immediate and unconditional release of ousted Nigerian President Mohamed Bazoum, Kopep Dabgat, the general secretary of the group West African Civil Society Forum, or WACSOF, questions ECOWAS's approach.
When you are having a negotiation, normally the difficult issues are the ones that come in last. The insistence of the release of the ousted president first as a precondition, you know, for negotiation or other things, we think it is not very prudent. So we are calling on ECOWAS to lift, first of all, these economic sanctions as an act of faith, which will convince perhaps the junta to come back to the table.
This week's summit marked the first time the regional bloc has recognized the coup administration in Niger, dashing hopes of an immediate reinstatement of Bazoum. Senior military men in Niger in July overthrew Bazoum and have detained him for alleged treason. In response, ECOWAS imposed heavy sanctions on Niger. ECOWAS ordered border closures, assets freeze, trade restrictions, and threatened a military invasion of Niger. ECOWAS said it would ease the sanctions against Niger if the junta agreed to the bloc's demands. West and Central Africa have recorded 8 coup d'etats since 2020. Political analyst Chukwudi Odoyeme says bad governance is the reason coups are receiving popular support in the region in the first place.
From the steps the military administration in Niger has taken, I don't see them backing down on the new line they have taken. But then again, ECOWAS has lost its beauty in the sense that the heads of state that populate them have a questionable hold onto power. And that's where the issue of legitimacy is lacking in the people who compose an organization. It becomes a difficult thing to hold on to whatever resolutions they have made. So I don't see any change coming from whatever ECOWAS is doing.
This week, Niger's transitional leader, Abdourahamane Chiani, said his government is forging a security and economic bloc known as the Alliance of the Sahel States with Mali and Burkina Faso, countries also ruled by their respective militaries. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
In Senegal, supporters of opposition politician Ousmane Sonko are feeling proud and relieved now that a court in Dakar has ordered his reinstatement on the electoral list of candidates for the 2024 presidential polls. But the state has appealed the latest ruling to the Supreme Court. Sonko's name was removed earlier this year after he was convicted for having sex with a minor. He has said that the charges against him were all politically motivated to keep him from running for president. Nafisa Dia is a member of Sonko's PASTEF party. She tells me that Sonko is ready, even within 24 hours, to submit the necessary signatures for his candidacy.
We are proud to see that we still have some judges who abide by the law. Most of them do abide by the law, but we have some judges, you know, who just do what the ruling party or the ruling asks them to do. They refuse any form of blackmail. And that's what happened with the judge of Ziguinchor, and that's what happened today also with this judge of Dakar.
Having been in jail and hunger strike for so long, do you think Sonko has enough time to present his candidacy by December 26th?
You know, even 24 hours will be enough for Mr. Sonko to do what it takes to present his candidacy for the upcoming presidential elections. Why? First, he has been deprived from his right to go and take some sponsors. But today's ruling gives him back this right. The judge he has said that he needs to be put back in the electoral rolls, meaning that he has the right to go to the General Directorate of Elections and take the files that allow him to go outside and take any sponsor he wants. The other part is paying 30 million CFA francs to participate in those applications. He had paid that amount of money, but it was returned to him on the ground that he was not in the electoral roll. But now that he's back, or now that the judge has ordered him to be back there, they no longer have a pretext not to take that money. And in one day, this can be done, provided that we get on time the actual decision of the judge, the notification, and then we bring that notification to the directorate, and they'll have no choice normally other than giving us those documents. And the other court, the constitutional court, will have no other choice than taking the money.
And what is this Supreme Court session that is supposed to be taking place on December 22nd? What is it that the Supreme Court has to do again?
Well, you know, once you have your sponsors and once you have the receipt that you have paid the money from the Caisse des Dépôts and the list of your sponsors throughout the country and the diaspora, you bring all that and you apply in front of the Constitutional Court. Now, what happened is that maybe the scenario we witnessed a few weeks ago will happen again. Since the state lawyer have decided to attack again this decision in front of the Supreme Court, that act is not supposed to suspend the rights of Mr. Ousmane Sonko, the right to get the sponsors and the right to pay for the money. But those people can still decide that it will suspend it as long as there is no definitive decision. Well, for them, a decision is not definitive as long as it's not in their favor.
Nafisa Diya is a member of Ousmane Sonko's PASTEF party. She was speaking with us from Moncton, Canada. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, December 15th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. In Liberia, as the transition from the outgoing George Weah government to the incoming Joseph Boakai administration continues, the battle for Speaker of the House of Representatives is heating up. Jonathan Fonati Kofa is one of the three candidates vying for the post. He has been the deputy speaker for the past 3 years. The speakership contest is taking place under the cloud of recent U.S. sanctions against two senators for allegedly offering or receiving bribes to manipulate legislative processes and public funding. Kofa tells me that if he becomes the next speaker, he will accelerate legislative reforms to make the body more accountable to the public.
One of the first things we want to look at is that the budget should operate to the benefit of our constituents, which are the districts, the people who live in the districts, so that 10% at least of the budget should go towards health care, education, and youth empowerment in each of the 73 districts. How much that amount will be, I think that's up for legislative negotiations. But I think to the extent that money is put in the budget that affects the district directly, it will impact national development and will impact economic development as well.
What was the budget distribution like in the past session?
In the last session, this outgoing session of the legislature, we did not have any money allocated for district development or empowerment.
You were deputy speaker for the past 3 years. What can you point to as your legislative successes? For example, a legislation that you think benefited Liberians?
We were primary in the domestic violence law that was passed. We were primary in introducing the FGM bill. A lot of international partners and local partners were involved in eventually ensuring that FGM as a practice is on the way to elimination and eradication. Those are two signature bills in this session. And from there, we're able to co-sponsor a number of developmental initiatives, both in our constituents and in the country at large.
So, Mr. Deputy Speaker, based on some of the comments I have been reading, both on social media platforms and the Liberian newspapers. Some Liberians think that the current legislature is a rubber stamp body in which some members accept bribes to approve legislation, regardless of whether it benefits the people or not. Your comment.
Well, I have not seen bribery go on in the House of Representatives. I've seen where legislation have been on what they call 4G. But remember, it's part of what some of the legislative reform needs to take place. Because sometimes before a bill gets to the floor, there's long consultation between the executive and the legislature. The problem is the part of that consultation happens in the back door. And so the public is not opportune to see how the process works. It needs to be a process that is more refined, in my opinion.
When you talk about process, you mean a public process?
Yes, I think a public process would benefit both the public and the lawmakers.
The U.S. government has just sanctioned two members of the legislature for corruption and accepting bribes. And some say that you should not be a speaker because of the same reason. Your comment?
Well, you know, we have a democratic system of government, and we got democratic leadership in the House of Representatives. I think to the extent that we all meet any kind of constitutional requirement for running for office, I don't think that should be a bar. The people then, who are the voters, maybe in this case the legislators, should be the one to determine the caliber and quality of leadership that they select.
So do you think the reasons that these other members were sanctioned for, they don't apply to you?
No. I'm not sure what criteria the U.S. used to put on sanctions. I'm not sure what evidence the U.S. has on the sanctions, because I wish the government would invite the U.S. government to provide those evidence. Then we will see what applies and what not apply. But bribery and what has been listed in the sanction report does not apply to me.
And let me ask you, do you have support of your, I don't want to call it caucus, of your party and all the other members coming? Do you think you can garner the support to win?
Yes, we have the endorsement of the CDC caucus. I'm a member of the CDC, and we have the endorsement of a majority of the independent lawmakers.
Let's assume you are elected speaker. What would you do differently to change this perceived notion about the legislature that I just asked you about? What would you do differently, or do you believe it needs no change?
No, as I said to you, we have begun a process of reform in the last 3 or 4 years. It has been slow. We think the incoming 55th legislature will accelerate that process. The first got to be open and transparent way in which we do business. The second one is accountability to our constituents, in which we do things like electronic voting and access to our records so the public can be able to judge the things we do. So we will accelerate that pace of reform in the 55th legislature so that the public can have more input and more judgment of what their lawmakers do.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jonathan Fonati Kofa is the Deputy Speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives. He is one of the three candidates vying for the position of Speaker. He was speaking with us from Randallstown, Maryland, USA. Zambia's parliament on Thursday passed the Access to Information Bill and now awaits the approval of President Hakainde Hichilema. Information Minister Cornelius Mwitwa says the bill marks a major achievement in President Hichilema's campaign promise to bring about transparency and accountability. Mwitwa tells me that the bill will strengthen democratic practices in Zambia.
The significance stands on two legs. Number one, it is in keeping with our electoral promises as made by President Hakainde Hichilema HH during the campaign ahead of the 2021 general elections. So he has walked the talk. This is a president who is committed to ensuring that public confidence is restored in the political arena. Number two, the Access to Information Bill being passed by Parliament is an indication of how this administration of President HH is willing to run an open society government, one which is premised on accountability and transparency by promoting wider citizens' participation in the governance of the country by accessing relevant and necessary information to know how citizens stand in relation to their government in respect with management of national affairs.
So, Minister, when you say relevant information, so are you saying there is a limitation to this law?
Any law, when it is put in place, particularly laws that are rights-based laws, it will give, you know, the rights to the rights holder, but it also creates responsibility in the enjoyment of such rights in what we call at law as clawback clauses. So that is not really to be seen as limitations, but as control measures. That is why we have said that in terms of principle number 33 of the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, it sets out the set down principles in terms of limitations. We as a country are within the sphere of the set out exemptions, and therefore we have not performed any excess in terms of placing limitations. We are within the standard norm of the African Commission on Human and People's Rights.
Cornelius Mwitwa, Zambia's Information Minister, he was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the latest news from the Africa Women's Basketball League. Host Alexandra Sporting Club of Egypt secured their third win of the Elite Africa Women's Basketball League when they defeated Nigeria's Customs 96-57 points to take a 3-0 run to the final day of the group phase.
So we'll do a short closing.
Play Kenya Ports Authority. Thanks. It was Customs' second loss in three matches before taking on DR Congo's CNSS on Friday. Abdurrahman Mohamed, coach of the Nigerian side, said despite the loss, his girls gave a good account of themselves.
I thought we did well the first two quarters. You know, we didn't make too much mistakes, and the game was a little bit close, and I thought we had a chance, you know, to close out those gaps, you know, coming back into the third quarter. But then the mistake just started happening, and then they pull away, and then they just settled.
In an earlier game, Rwanda Energy Group secured a 96-65 win over ASPEC of Benin for a 4-0 clean slate in Group B. REG opened their campaign with an 86-45 victory over Cameroon's Overdose Up station on the first day before stunning one of the tournament favorites, Inter Club of Angola, 96-89. In football news, with barely less than 30 days to the CAF Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023, CAF has launched over-the-counter ticket sales for the Showpiece Africa football event. The over-the-counter ticket sales will ensure that locals in Cote d'Ivoire have an opportunity to purchase tickets for the global showpiece that will kick off on the 13th of January. The global online sales was launched on the 9th of November 2023. The over-the-counter ticket sales will be in 12 cities and towns across Cote d'Ivoire. In the meantime, World Football Governing Body FIFA has approved a total of 30 Nigerian referees to be placed on the international duty list for the year 2024. The list comprised of 11 referees, 11 assistant referees, 4 beach soccer referees and 4 futsal referees. And now to cricket, where South African cricket national team, the Proteas, were handed a comprehensive 106-run defeat by India in the third and final T20 international at the Wanderers on Thursday night. Needing 202 rounds to win, the Proteas were bowled out for 95 in the 14th over. With a victory, India ensured the series ended in a 1-1 draw. Proteas captain Aiden McCamb made 25 runs and middle order batter David Miller hit 35. They received little support, however, from the rest of the lineup. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, December 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.